Hey there! If you like true crime stories and you love being in the great outdoors, you have come to the right place. I'm Tara, your host. Welcome to Crime Off the Grid. Hey everybody, it's time for another episode of Crime Off the Grid. I'm Tara.
And I'm Nancy.
Hey, great news. Nancy has agreed to co-host with me on Crime Off the Grid for most of our episodes. Now, I don't know, Nancy, this could be dangerous.
Yay!
You know, I think Nancy's already got a little fan base. I've been getting some texts and emails about, I like Nancy. So she agreed. Hopefully she knows what she's getting herself into.
That's scary.
Hey, but as a reminder, in case you haven't listened to some of the previous episodes that Nancy helped me with, she has over 32 years of law enforcement experience with the National Park Service and the U.S. Forest Service. So girl knows her stuff.
There you go.
And by the way, WWND, you'll know what that means if you listen to those other episodes. So today we're going to go and head to the Midwest region of the National Park Service and talk about a case from Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore. Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore is a national lakeshore in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and it extends for 42 miles along the shore of Lake Superior and covers over 73,000 acres.
Nice.
The park has extensive views of the hilly shoreline with picturesque rock formations, waterfalls, and sand dunes. Pictured Rocks derives its name from the 13 miles of colorful sandstone. The cliffs reach up to 200 feet above lake level, and they have been naturally sculptured into a variety of shallow caves, arches, and formations resembling castle turrets and human profiles. I think we could have fun with that. The Congress designated Pictured Rocks as the first national lakeshore in the U.S. in 1966.
Can't wait to go there.
I know. Well, look, activities there, they say, include camping, backpacking, sea kayaking, cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, ice climbing, snowmobiling, and ice fishing. So I think I'm going to take a drive down Interstate 90, pull over, pick you up, and we're heading to the Pictured Rocks.
You can do it any time of the year. I mean, there's just so much activity year round. That would be fun.
Let's take kayaks though. I want to see kayak. So the case we're going to talk about today is an incident type that we've already discussed in two other Crime Off the Grid episodes. So here's a hint. Look at our cover art for the podcast, you know, if you want a spoiler. And this is not going to be the last one of those as well. So sadly.
Mm-hmm.
All right. On June 22nd, 2006, Tom Richardson went to the visitor center in Pictured Rocks to report that his wife went off the cliff, like a 140-foot cliff, at a place known as Miner's Castle. And he told responders and investigators that they were on a trip visiting their, quote, honeymoon spot. And he said he left Juanita there to take pictures at the cliff area because he had some, as he told first responders, gastrointestinal distress. And Nancy's laughing only because she's worried what I'm going to say.
That's right.
And he needed to run back to the visitor center to go to the bathroom. And when he came back to the cliff area, he says, she was nowhere to be seen and she was just gone. So I am going to say it. I think diarrhea gets the blame or credit for a lot of excuses. And
yes, it does.
Yeah. So if you need to get out of something like a ticket from a cop, or if you miss an exam, just say you had explosive diarrhea and who's going to question you? And I really think that's why he told the responders that. But anyway, not to go too far down the brown trail, many people do find themselves in precarious situations where they do have diarrhea that interferes in embarrassing fashion. Wow, I really am going down a tangent, but I'm almost done. But did you hear about that poor guy on United Airlines that exploded diarrhea all over the plane up and down the aisle? And they had to do an emergency landing?
No.
Oh my gosh, that was all over the news. You need to watch the news. Bless his heart. Anyway, I digress. So Tom says that he was afraid of heights, and he went to the edge, like on his belly, scooching to the edge, and looked down and saw Juanita, and he recognized the white jacket or sweater she was wearing and said that's how he knew that was her lying there 140 feet below.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, after that report, the Pictured Rock superintendent Northup was working at the park headquarters at Sandpoint. And when Northup was informed that a woman had fallen off the cliff at Miner's Castle, he left the park headquarters immediately, and he gets to his house and stops and grabs his gear, his climbing rope and other rescue gear, and went straight to Miner's Castle. So from the rock platform, Northup observed a lifeless female body with blonde hair and a white shirt lying on the edge just above the level of Lake Superior. And there was a very obvious trail of blood that he could see leading away from the body. And he does a cursory look at the site and said there was no evidence that the cliff had given way. You know, so that's, you know, they're kind of checking it out from the beginning, like what could have happened? And he walks 10 to 15 feet in both directions from where he estimated the fall had occurred to see if there was any evidence of broken shrubbery or subsistence of soil or broken rock. And he saw no evidence of that. So he actually considered this location to be safe. And now a park ranger named Hughes, Ranger Hughes responded and proceeded to Miner's Castle, where he encountered Tom. And Tom told Ranger Hughes that he and his wife were walking on the trail from Miner's Castle towards Sandpoint, and they stopped at an overlook to have lunch. And so he says he got up and left to go back to Miner's Castle area to use the bathroom, and then he adds, and change his shoes. And he indicated that when he came back, he didn't see his wife anywhere, so he's telling him the same story. So he yelled, and she didn't answer. So then he looks over the cliff edge and saw a white shirt, at which he went back to Miner's Castle to report it. While speaking with Ranger Hughes, Tom repeatedly, for some reason, kept making a reference to a foot injury that his wife, Juanita, had previously suffered. Specifically, Tom stated that Juanita had foot surgery and has trouble walking. So, you know, he was setting the stage for Juanita being clumsy and possibly falling on her own.
Yeah, saying that she loses her balance due to that surgery that she had on her foot.
Right, which witnesses later on say she didn't have a limp, she had no gait, she had no issue at all with her foot.
And she exercised all the time.
All the time. So she was in pretty good shape. Yeah, that part of his story didn't make sense. So personnel from the Alger County Sheriff's Department, Michigan State Police, Michigan Department of Natural Resources, and Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore extricated Juanita's body from the rock ledge of Lake Superior where she came to rest. And she was transported by boat to Alger County Ambulance and then to Munising Memorial Hospital, where she was pronounced dead on arrival.
When deputies arrived at the hospital with the body and with Tom, one of the deputies interviewed him. They went down the hall into this small room, and there was actually a park ranger and the deputy and one other person there for the interview. And the deputy thought it was really strange while he was interviewing that Tom was very calm.
Yeah.
He said too calm for just losing his wife.
Hmm.
And when Tom would pause in his statements, almost like he was trying to think of the next thing to say, the deputy thought he seems like he wants to tell more. He wants to say something more, but he doesn't.
Huh.
So they're there doing the interview. Well, later that night, somewhere around 10:30, Tom's story changes. And this time, he said that he came back to the cliff, and Juanita was standing there. She turned and made eye contact with Tom, and then she jumped off the cliff and screamed, "Oh my God," as she was falling down the cliff.
Interesting.
That was interesting. So they continued the interview, and it went into the morning. So the next morning, it got even more strange. And Tom told the deputy yet another version of what happened. And this time, he said that she walked over to the edge of the cliff site and looked and was standing there and looked down as though she wanted to show Tom something. And then she kind of turned and just, according to him, fell over.
Wow.
And so the deputy's thinking, so now it's an accident? And it was kind of weird because within 24 hours after her death, there was three stories as to how Juanita died.
Wow.
So you got to kind of wonder, was Tom's mind playing tricks on him at this time? But I think the deputy was beginning to think something more sinister had happened at the edge of that cliff.
Right.
Other than her just accidentally falling.
Right. Well, I don't want to pass any judgment on how somebody reacts to a traumatic event because there is no normal reaction.
Right.
But trauma affects people in different ways. But one of the things about the neurobiology of trauma is you have these memories and you can't recall memories quite often until you've had a few sleep cycles, for example. So, and usually the facts are there, you know, just picture like sticky notes that your story is on these sticky notes and, but they're all not together in the right order. And maybe some of them, some of your memories just don't come until you've had some sleep cycles, but recalling details or additional details is something that is kind of normal when somebody has a traumatic event or sees something very traumatic, but completely changing stories is not a typical trauma response. So almost like completely different memories coming with completely different stories. That's not really a trauma response. And I'm not an expert, but I have studied that a little
bit. Yeah, I'm not either, but that definitely makes sense.
So let's go back a little bit to the beginning of the Richardsons' relationship. They were from a small town called McBain, Michigan. And when Tom and Juanita first met, they both had a very strong interest in photography. And they both were very religious and both supposedly shared a very strong faith. They dated about 2 years. And they married, though, when they found out Juanita was pregnant. So their wedding was actually just less than 1 year after they finished high school. So pretty young.
Yeah, they were.
And they go to their honeymoon at Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore. And then they go on to have three children. Tom worked as a boat builder and Juanita worked as a secretary at the local school after being a stay-at-home mom for a while. They were both very active in their church. And Tom led the youth group and Juanita sang in the choir. And up to this point, they'd been married for 23 years and had just become empty nesters with their youngest going off to college. When interviewed after this incident, the kids described Tom and Juanita's marriage as a great and happy marriage. And when asked if they ever fought, they said no more than any other marriages and were always kind of joking. But multiple witnesses who were friends and family and coworkers shed a different light on their marriage.
And they sure did.
All seemed to say how verbally abusive Tom was to Juanita. And many of them said that he rarely said anything nice to her or about her. And he regularly called her an effing C word and a stupid B word, that she can't do anything right. And coworkers said he was a monkey's butt. And that's my word. They use a different word when describing him. When an attractive woman was around and he was obnoxious, he was a vulgar flirt and said vulgar things in front of his wife. And he would say things like, I wish you still had a body like that, but then pretend he was joking. And he would say things like, get your head out of your ass. You're so stupid. Anything she did, it was never right. And by the way, this is a form of emotional abuse, and emotional abuse is still abuse.
It sure is,
Humiliating, degrading, dehumanizing someone is a sign of what is called coercive control in a relationship. And a lot of his behavior is also what we call gaslighting. So when he hurls an insult and claims he was just kidding while blaming her for being too sensitive, for not appreciating his insults. So when concerned friends would question her, Juanita would just say, oh, that's Tom being Tom, and just brush it off in front of him.
That is so typical to do that.
It's typical of really anybody in a relationship with where there's coercive control and emotional abuse. And on one occasion, a friend of Tom's said that Tom admitted to him that he hit Juanita and gave her a black eye. So the fact that Tom admitted at least one time to physical abuse, it shows the abuse is increasing in severity and frequency. And it's unfortunate that Juanita couldn't have confided in somebody, and a law enforcement officer could have given her what we call a lethality assessment. And I'm sure that would have brought forward their history of abuse. And it can also be an indicator of future danger of serious bodily injury or death. And maybe after seeing that on paper, and this is how victims react a lot of times, the first time they see on paper how much abuse they have endured, and maybe she could have gotten help from professionals with regard to leaving her abusive marriage.
That would have been great, because so many times the victim is convinced that they can't live without them.
Right.
And that they, you know, can't do anything, would be lost, wouldn't be able to manage without that person in their life.
Well, that's because of the emotional abuse inflicted on them, and they're essentially beat down. Have I ever told you, this is another squirrel trail I'm going on, but it's sort of related. So in the summer, in August, in Yellowstone National Park, the bison start their rut. And there's this amazing area called Hayden Valley where there's thousands of bison and they're trying to mate. So what they do is chase, a big bull bison will pick out a cow bison and just chase her down and beat her down over and over and over for days until she's so exhausted, I guess. And I look at that as like physical and emotional repeated abuse on the part of that bison. And then he mates with her and she just blindly, and then you watch them. It is kind of a beautiful, amazing sight, but all over Hayden Valley, which picture Dances with Wolves, if you've never seen that, maybe it kind of looks like that that hillside. And they're paired up all over, as far as your eye can see, paired up all over the place. And then when the big bull gets up and walks around, the cow is just, looks like she's, you know, a zombie following that bull around all over the place. And then last year's calf, which is now like a year old, so the kid is just following this activity all over the valley. And so the cycle of abuse continues. and I, of course, that's where my brain goes, but it's an amazing sight to see, but that's what it looks like to me. But we're humans. We're not bison, and nobody deserves to be treated that way.
That's correct.
And I wonder if the kids who believed that their parents had this wonderful marriage, I wonder if they picked up on the way Tom treated Juanita and what her response typically was, you know, the fact that that's just Tom. And maybe they thought that was normal.
I would say that they did, because they all three were on his side. I mean, they just backed him like, you know, there's no way he could have done anything bad to her.
And that was not abuse, apparently, in their eyes. But around 16 years into their marriage, Juanita becomes suspicious that Tom might be having an affair. So when confronted, Tom says to her, "Well, maybe I should have an affair because you aren't fulfilling your wifely duties." So he's blaming Juanita for the problems in their marriage. And she takes that on and she absorbs that and she starts to blame and doubt herself as well. But they do end up separated for a while. She knew he was cheating, but just couldn't prove it. And she was suffering from some depression that she was getting treatment for, fortunately. So Tom confides in a friend that he was actually in love with someone else, even though he knew it was wrong. And he claimed to be very religious, active in his church, but he was still carrying on this affair quite openly. However, that woman eventually ended that relationship. And she dodged a bullet, if you ask me.
Yeah, good for her.
A year after they were separated, he decides to go back to Juanita. And he confessed in front of the church and asked for forgiveness from his church and his family. So they did forgive him and took him back. And he moves back home with Juanita and his family. And then just blames his affair on a midlife crisis. So what does he do after he determines his actions were a midlife crisis?
He goes and buys a sports car.
That's right. He gets a fancy black Corvette. I didn't get a midlife crisis car. Did you get a midlife crisis car?
I did not. I couldn't afford a midlife crisis car.
Well, by the way, I don't think Tom could either, because he loses his job as a boat builder, but then he gets a new job with FedEx driving a truck.
Yeah.
So Tom and Juanita actually start to build a new log home on a gorgeous piece of property in Cadillac, Michigan. And oddly, while they're building their new house, it's kind of long before it's finished, their current old home burns to the ground, which that seems like a strange coincidence to me.
It does to me too when I heard that.
Yeah, and I didn't hear any more about that. I don't know if there was insurance or anything like that. So Tom and Juanita have to move in with friends, and those friends later told investigators that Tom was acting like his old monkey butt self, putting Juanita down, being a jerk, and the friends told her, just leave. Why do you put up with him? Get away from him. But she just, I think, had such low self-esteem, and partly her faith tells her, no, y'all can't get divorced, and they have children, so there's a lot of obstacles that prevent a woman from leaving an abusive husband. And she thinks maybe their beautiful new house would actually fix everything. So she puts all of her energy into working on her house.
A lot of people do that, though. They think that if we have a baby, it'll be better. If we move into this new house, it'll be better. And they just want to keep that family unit together, especially the female does.
Right. But it's about power and control, and there's not really anything she has any control over to make things better.
Mm-hmm.
So Tom became obsessed with how much money she would spend for the new house. And after the house was actually finished and with payments for the Corvette, they were in a lot of debt.
They were not following the Dave Ramsey plan. They were living way above their means.
They needed to listen to a Dave Ramsey podcast or buy the book.
They did. So when Juanita and Tom decided to go on a small vacation, they were going to go to Pictured Rocks to their quote-unquote honeymoon spot. Right. Well, 6 days before the vacation, Tom and Juanita both went to see their lawyer. And Tom was wanting to make sure that their wills and everything was in place and everything was up to date.
Interesting timing.
So they go see the lawyer, and Tom, according to the lawyer, Tom was excessively adamant. He's like sitting on the edge of his seat saying, we got to have a will. We got to have a will. We got to have a will.
That's crazy.
And the lawyer's like, chill out, Tom. Calm down. You're just going on a short vacation. And while you're, you know, God forbid anything happen while you're gone, but if one of you dies, it's going to go to the other. And he said Tom's urgency just went away, like the flip of a switch.
Weird.
He just sat back, and then everything was fine for him.
Wow.
So then, going back to when he was being interviewed by law enforcement, they're trying to think that the motive. What is the motive to this guy doing this to his wife? Well, one motive is money. And it just shows you that he wanted to make sure that their life insurance policies were up to date. And if anything were to happen to, say, Juanita with her policies, it would total about $250,000.
Hmm.
And he would be debt free.
Hmm.
So
maybe he did read Dave Ramsey's book.
That's true. So, and it also goes back to letting us know that why he changed his story on her committing suicide is on most insurance policies, including the one that I have and my husband has, it says if you commit suicide, you don't get any money.
That makes sense.
Correct. So if he went with the she committed suicide story, then he would not get any insurance money and he would still be in debt.
Hmm.
Now with this debt, as I said, he'd be debt-free without a costly divorce. And with the policies that they had, it equaled $243,000. And he was $235,000 in debt.
Wow.
So it would cover the entire debt. So he could almost like start over being debt-free with a little bit of pocket change left over. So they are thinking that there's motives here for him when he decides to get rid of Juanita.
Wow. So soon after the death and his initial interviews, Tom drives back home like 4 hours from Pictured Rock to be with his children, who are, of course, devastated. They have a funeral, and Tom does this weird display, and it was described as a show, where he walks up in front of everybody and caresses a picture on an easel of Juanita and just appears to sob, uncontrollably sob, loudly sob in front of everyone there, but no one recalls even seeing tears.
So while Tom was on his FedEx route, he would stop at this convenience store slash restaurant type thing, and he met a female named Kelly. And Kelly worked at the convenience store where, you know, where Tom would stop often on his route. So he spent a lot of time with her. He called her. He went there to the convenience store every day that he was working. When Kelly was asked by law enforcement, she denied any affair with him. She said they were just close friends. And they looked at phone records, and Kelly and Tom talked 383 times in the last 10 months.
Wow.
So investigators are asking Kelly, what were you talking about? And she said mostly they talked about Bible verses and the Bible and religion and God.
Of course.
And they thought that, yeah, they thought that was strange because that's a lot of time on the phone to just talk about that. They were talking on the phone all the time or in person. Tom asked Kelly what her requirements were for a husband. And so Kelly told him that they needed to be close to God, a non-smoker, non-drinker, and no living ex-wife. Interesting, right?
Yeah.
So then Tom tells Kelly at one point that Juanita is going to be dead soon. She would be, he said she would be dead before Christmas.
Interesting.
Now, prior to that, Juanita felt a lump, and so they went to the doctor. She was thinking it was cancer, and they tested it, and it was not.
Right.
So Juanita did not have any cancer, but Tom led Kelly to believe that she did, and that she was going to die of cancer before Christmas. So then Tom proceeds to ask, Kelly, will you wait for me until my wife dies? And Kelly says, yeah, I'm not going anywhere, which is just seems bizarre to me. And then another thing that is really strange is that when Tom and Juanita went to Pictured Rocks on June 21st, 2006, Tom called Kelly on the phone that night that they were there and talked to her for 13 minutes.
Interesting, because they just started their relationship September 2005, and he's already saying she's going to that his wife is going to be dead by Christmas, which is only, what, 3 months, 4 months? And Tom bought Kelly a pair of earrings for Christmas, which is not something a male buys another woman who's just a friend.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I saw that too. That is just weird on so many levels. You just don't do that.
Yeah, and some of the lies that he was even telling Kelly, he never acknowledged that he himself had a past infidelity, but he sure accused Juanita of having an extramarital affair, and he told Kelly that Juanita had attempted to commit suicide while they were separated, and that's the reason that he agreed to reconcile with her, even though he didn't really want to.
And he also didn't tell Kelly that he was a drinker, a heavy drinker.
Yes, apparently. Mm-hmm. And he said that he didn't believe in divorce because, quote, in God's eyes, they're supposed to stay married, end quote. And he told her that death was the only circumstance in which divorce was justified. That doesn't even make sense. I don't even understand that statement. So get this, at some point after Juanita's funeral, Tom shows up uninvited at Kelly's residence and brought her a plant from Juanita's funeral. And
creepy.
Nothing says I'm a real catch like bringing some funeral carnations from your wife's funeral to your new love interest. And Kelly did not appreciate him showing up unexpectedly, and because she said she was getting ready for the fair. She was supposed to be going to the fair with another man named Ron, who, by the way, was another married man that she was dating, who was paying some bills for Kelly. Of course, you know.
Of course.
We got to get some sugar daddies on both sides here. And he also claimed he couldn't really date yet until he was divorced. But I would call the fair a date. I mean, oh my gosh, when I was in school, if you got asked to the fair, that was a date.
that was a date, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
A big deal.
Right. So Kelly ended their relationship soon after the funeral plant saga.
Good for her.
Yeah. And she dodged a bullet too, I think. But she ended up eventually having a relationship with Ron. And then Ron said that he and Kelly are quite close after he was interviewed. And he said they would hopefully get married. And
hopefully then, after his divorce.
Hopefully.
So 1 month, get this, 1 month after Juanita died, Tom started dating, which is just incredible to me. But he had friends. He wanted friends to hook him up with, you know, different people so he could meet somebody and go on a date with them. So the law enforcement caught wind of that, and they arranged for Tom to go on a date with a woman who had also happened to be a Michigan State trooper.
Right. Well, that trooper's name was Natalie Torres, and at some point, Torres was assigned to perform the undercover work as part of that investigation into Juanita's death. Mm-hmm. Specifically, Torres posed as a woman named Sue Mullen, a friend of Tom's acquaintances, Tim and Nancy. And on August 21st, 2006, so just a couple of months after Juanita's death, Torres accompanied Tim and Nancy to a restaurant where she met Tom. And she indicated that she, you know, as Sue Mullen, was looking to establish a base of friends in the Cadillac area because she would be moving to that area in the near future. And Tom responded that he had a cabin next to his house and she was welcome to stay there at any time. So Tom and Torres, aka Sue, exchanged contact information and began communicating primarily by email. And Tom later sent a handwritten letter to Torres in which he indicated that he believed his emails were being read and that his phone was tapped, which it probably was. Mm-hmm. And interesting that he had some self-awareness that was even happening. But in the beginning of Tom and, quote, Sue Mullen's communications, he didn't offer any information about the circumstances surrounding his wife's death, but did make repeated references to his closed head injury. He kept saying, you know, I've got this head injury and causes me memory loss. And, you know, poor guy, what a victim.
Yeah, exactly.
So Torres, however, never observed any indication that he was experiencing any speech, language, or memory problems like he would go on about. And Tom exhibited a high level of interest in Torres, and he regularly suggested that the two meet up and spend time together. So he was, you know... He was pestering the heck out of her, which, I mean, that was part of the plan, and he fell right into it. But on October 21st, 2006, Torres told Tom that she would be in the Cadillac area in the coming days and that she would be available to meet. And guess where they had their meeting?
I don't know.
Very exciting.
Where'd they have their meeting?
Romantic place. In a Walmart parking lot.
Of course you do that there.
Of course. But I'm going to guess. Well, so the two met for a prop. Approximately 40 minutes. And during that time, Tom just rattled on about his account of what happened to his wife. And of course, the conversation was recorded. And I'm going to guess that's why they were in a Walmart parking lot, because, you know, the undercover van with all the technology was probably a few spaces away.
Close by.
Yeah. And so Tom told Torres the details of seeing Juanita fall and said, as she turned, she just fell, and I heard her scream all the way down, end quote. And I guess they got all they needed on the recording, so Torres, a.k.a. Sue Mullen, sent an email to Tom ending their relationship.
So the law enforcement, they did feel, you're right, Tara, they did feel that they had a case with the relationship with Kelly, the life insurance, and three different stories of what happened on the edge of the cliff. So on February 6, 2007, Tom was arrested for first-degree murder.
Hmm. So trial was held in a Michigan state court, and the crime occurred on federal land, but Pictured Rocks had what's called proprietary jurisdiction, meaning the National Park Service can't be the lead investigators on crimes against persons. So they mainly enforce resource crimes and misdemeanor crimes from Title 36 of the CFR, the Code of Federal Regulations.
Mm-hmm. So when they were in trial, the prosecution went 5 weeks of testimony, which to me is incredibly a lengthy time, you know, to do that. But when we were reviewing this case and I was reading some of the witness statements that were being said, it was 211 pages of different people and their witness statements.
Yeah.
So Crazy. Every one of them, or the majority of them, all, it was redundant because they all had the same thing to say. They described Tom as an abusive husband. They heard her call Juanita a dumb bitch, stupid. She can never do anything right. They saw her with a black eye. And they all witnessed that, a lot of them. So this went on for years and with a lot of different people. He didn't care.
No, he's such a narcissist.
In the room.
Yeah.
Right, right. So he just said it as they, wherever they were, he told everybody how he what he thought of Juanita.
Mm-hmm. Well, besides all of the witnesses from the friends and family and coworkers and law enforcement and the digital evidence, like the phone conversations, Dr. Smith, the medical examiner, testified that Juanita had bruises and injuries that were actually consistent with the fall. And he also discerned that there really wasn't any evidence of an altercation or struggle prior to her fall, but a push would not necessarily leave any mark or injury on the, on the person being pushed. And there was some suggestion, because she had a lot of injuries around her neck as well. And they said, but the application of what they said is a chokehold, which they were referring to strangulation, would not necessarily leave a mark or injury on the body of the person being choked or strangled. And an examination of the upper part of the back of Juanita's thighs and her lower buttocks revealed the presence of two bruises that were kind of linear, consistent with having been caused by a strike with something like some elongated object, which could have been a rod or a stick or even a boot. The bruises in question were inflicted at around the at or around the time of the fall, so they weren't old bruises. It wasn't something that had happened prior to her fall. And one thing that came out as well from witness statements was Tom was into martial arts, and he was apparently well on his way to becoming a black belt.
He was in the martial arts for 15 years.
Wow. There. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. And the person, his instructor said that, Tom would have learned between 15 and 25 kicks.
Wow. Yeah.
The prosecution also showed the jury a video of a life-size dummy wearing about the same, weighing about the same as Juanita, going off a cliff. And so they would allow it to just, they did different scenarios. They allowed it to just fall and then they would document where it landed. And then they rigged it so that they were able to push or kick the dummy off the cliff. And when pushed, the dummy landed much closer to the spot where Juanita landed.
Wow. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. And the defense was basically that Juanita just had an injury. She was clumsy and fell due to an accident. And they tried to explain away the reason that Tom had so many different stories was because of, quote, PTSD or an acute reaction to a stress event. So following the presentation of evidence, which basically was demonstrating the opportunity to kill the victim, he had consciousness of guilt. He had multiple motives that you described to kill the victim, you know, his affairs and financial burdens and the other circumstantial evidence, including the digital evidence. So the jury, which was composed of 7 women and 5 men, deliberated over 2 days at the conclusion of that trial, which by then it was 6 weeks. But they were not unanimous in their verdict at first.
You're right, Tara. It wasn't a unanimous vote with the jurors. So they were still divided. So two of the guys stood up and one of them kind of kicked the other guy in the back of the upper thigh, and it caused the leg to kind of buckle and to, for him to lose his balance. And it reminds me of when we would do defensive tactics and we'd do knee strikes and things like that. Well, you would knee somebody, which is kind of that same area.
Big nerve bundle.
Then, right. And then it would cause them to collapse.
Yeah.
And to fall or lose their balance. So if she was standing on the edge of the cliff and he did that, it would cause her to fall over the edge. And then
and
the
he would
jury,
know.
He would know that because of the 15, you're right, because of the 15 to 25 kicks that he learned.
Yeah.
He learned all that in karate. Mm-hmm. And so then all the jurors came to the conclusion and they were unanimous when they went back to the judge.
So they found him guilty of first degree murder and he was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Yeah, correct.
Tom Richardson appealed, and part of his appeal was that demonstration that the one juror did to the other. And I think that was during jury deliberations. The judge instructed the jury to not consider any evidence they did not hear in testimony during the trial. And so Tom Richardson was saying, hey, I need to appeal because that should not have been allowed in their jury deliberations. And that was one thing. And the other thing was he tried to say that all of the witness testimony that talked about his character and his personality, him being abusive, should not have been allowed. And the Michigan Court of Appeals affirmed his conviction. They said, no, you're still guilty. And then it apparently went all the way to the Michigan Supreme Court, and they affirmed the conviction as well. And in the history of Pictured Rocks, with millions of visitors annually, and I think back then they were at 400,000 visitors annually. It's now around a million visitors each year. It was the first death off the cliff in the history of it being a park.
Wow.
And the National Park Service provided a public risk manager to testify. And she said, and she used the year of 2007 for her statistics that she was sharing in court. She said in 2007, 27 people suffered recreational type fatal falls. And that's not counting like suicide or homicide, but that's throughout the National Park Service areas. And given that approximately 270 million people visited National Park Service areas in 2007, the odds, statistically speaking, of dying from an accidental fall was 1 in 1 million. And she concluded that Pictured Rocks has, quote, an impressive safety record, end quote, especially considering that a lot of recreational activity occurs there.
Yeah, and they don't have, it is so safe there. They don't have guardrails, from what I read, guardrails or any barriers, so you know people can just walk those trails freely.
Right. That's because, you know, as the superintendent said earlier, like that rock is stable; it doesn't give way. There's not anything that is going to collapse on someone. But I mean, if you're going to walk to the edge, I guess that's on you. Yes, I said earlier, I don't trust anybody when I'm on the cliff's edge. You know, I'm gonna sit down. So if they're going to push me off, I'm not afraid of heights. But it just crosses my mind that somebody might just go, boop, and there I go.
There she goes.
That's where my brain goes.
But then you see people doing, like when I was at the Grand Canyon, I had to look away. People are standing on the edge of the cliff, and they got one leg in the air, and they're taking selfies. And I'm just like, I got to leave. This is an accident waiting to happen.
Well, yeah, because since this incident happened in Pictured Rocks, even there at the park, there have been other accidental falls, and many were because of people doing just what you said, trying to get that selfie or taking a risk to get that really great photo.
Right.
Well, when Juanita Richardson died on the cliffs at Pictured Rocks, the tragedy didn't end there. The aftermath tore her family apart, with her parents and sister certain that her husband, Tom, had killed her, and her kids were just as sure that he didn't.
Yeah, that's sad.
Oh, I don't know about you, but every time I talk about one of these stories, I just feel like mentally I need to redirect my brain. And I hate to end on such a sad note. And it reminds me of eating sushi. Do you eat sushi, Nancy?
No, I do not eat sushi.
Well, when you eat sushi, they always give you ginger with your sushi to cleanse your palate. So I need to cleanse my palate.
Okay, go for it.
So I have some jokes for you.
Okay.
What do you call a backpacker with no nose or body?
I have no idea.
Nobody knows.
So, hey, I was partly right on that
one. Right. Well, nobody. All right. Nobody knows. Get it? Okay. So I got one more for you. What is the most dangerous mountain to climb?
Everest.
Well, that's not funny, but it's actually... The most dangerous mountain to climb is Kilimanjaro. Kilimanjaro. Again, when you get to the top, sit down.
There you go.
Oh, well, okay, that's going to be the end for this episode. Stay safe, everybody, in wild places, and seriously, watch out for the company you keep.
And don't blame everything on diarrhea.
Okay.